Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
My favorite show, because it's my show, In the Jar. And I'm telling you what, man, I'm hungry as shit right now. I saw the term I'm hearing from the biological experts, the Andrew Hubermans, those types of fellas, is that magic happens when you don't eat after dark. I hope I'm saying that right. Magic happens when you don't eat after dark. So I'm hungry as shit right now. We're doing an evening shoot this week. A lot going on. And I'm hungry as shit. Because I'm going to sleep on no food tonight. And we're going to see how it goes. We're going to see how we feel in the morning. We've done it before. And you get an increased sense of energy when you wake up after not eating for a certain period of time. Now, I've experimented with fasting. You know, like I did a 3-day fast one time a couple months ago, and that shit sucked. Like, if you told me, bro, dude, you gotta do a 3-day fast coming up in the next 48 hours, I'd be dreading it like Jesus dreaded the crucifixion, dog. Hundo P. It's just the way it gets you in the, I think there's a biological term for this. The period 24 to 48 hours, autophagy. I learned that. I've been saying that word wrong. I thought it was autophagy. Apparently it's autophagy. I got that from Joe Rogan's podcast with, ironically, Jelly Roll. Because Jelly Roll's dropped like 100 pounds, he said. And he was at his peak, 520 pounds. He's down to like 420, he said on Joe Rogan the other day. So he's doing a lot of fasting because apparently autophagy helps, if you lose a lot of weight, it helps get rid of a lot of the like excess skin that formerly fat people have from losing a bunch of weight. Autophagy helps that. All that to say, man, it's not fun. And any fighter that I know will attest to to that. With weight cuts, it's different because I feel like some guys respond well to fasting, other guys may not. And so everybody's kind of comes up with their own formulated plan. I know Sean O'Malley journals every day during fight camp and his weight cut so he can go back years. You know, I think he's got a 6 or 7 career in the UFC now. He can go back in his journals from, you know, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, a year ago, and see how he was responding to different things. So it's a really good way to be aware of your habits and kind of dial that in accordingly. You know what I'm saying? You know, based on what works well for him. But all that to say, man, like, the autophagy for me on that 3-day fast, it set in like on the second day. I remember I went to a jiu-jitsu tournament out in Mesa, which is like an hour, you know, almost hour 20 east of where I live here in the Phoenix Valley. And I remember like driving to the jiu-jitsu tournament. This is my second day of fasting, and I was kind of like, all right, damn, this is real. You know what I mean? Even on the first day, it was tough. And go to the tournament, you know, you're standing, you're walking around. It's a big symposium, you know what I mean? So you're walking around, seeing different guys compete. And so, you know, that's 3 or 4 hours. And then by the time I got in the car, really the back part of being at that tournament, I was losing, bro. I was losing. And I looked at my girl and I was like, yo, can we go home? She was like, yeah, we get in the car, man. I remember I can visualize the moment where I got in the car and I sat down. I think I was driving too. Hour 20 trip, hour 15. And I was just like, fuck, dude. That was the moment for me. That was like, dig deep. Holy fuck. This is not for the faint of heart type shit. Fasting, I mean. So all that to say, I guess me being hungry has me fixated on the idea that... what else, dude? What else? Let's get into some clips of the week. How about you?
Of apathy, right there, and avoid it like the plague. Avoid it like the plague. It's the damnedest thing in the world, and you'll run on these guys as fall on the campus. Yeah, why get up to work? Why play football? Yeah, you work too hard. Why do that? Yeah, come on and have a joint with me.
John.
Yeah, and he'll sit there and look at his shoe for an hour. Yeah. And he's thinking great thoughts. What the hell he's going to do? You think I'm kidding you?
I'm not kidding you, am I?
And those people are apathetic as hell, and they're going nowhere. No. And there are a hell of a lot of people, and they take a lot of people with them, fellas. They take a lot of people with them, because we all have a tendency to be lazy. And I don't know whether it's body chemistry or mind or whether it's a combination. It has to be a little bit of both. We all have a tendency to ease off at times. That's why you need good teachers and good coaches to push you a little bit. We all have to be pushed. The fact that I'm a football coach, it's a competitive thing. I despise for people to beat us. That's why when I get good football players, I'm not going to let somebody else beat us, because I'm cheating myself and I'm cheating my players.
Dude, you listen to coaches like that talk, and you're just like, some of these coaches are, come on, dog. I got to put this on D&D. All right. A lot of these coaches, man, when you hear them talk to their players, it's just like it comes natural to them. And we've talked about the art of coaching on the show before. It's like not all teams are built the same. Not all teams are going to have the same set of personalities, the same set of talents. this guy knew how to talk to his locker room. Woody Hayes, apparently is a legend coach out of Ohio. You know, these coaches and owners, I mean, people forget that the state of Ohio is the birthplace of football. Nobody really goes to the Hall of Fame anymore because it's in damn Canton. And what else is there to do in damn Canton, Ohio? I've been a couple of times. There ain't much to do. But some of these damn coaches, they got the art down pat. You know what I'm saying? They know how to motivate their guys. And that speech might not work with a team today. It might not have worked with 100 other teams back then. But the cool thing about speeches like that is that they know exactly what they need to hit on at the exact right time. And they know exactly how to deliver it because they know their players. It's interesting, man. I was thinking, too, about the progression of athletes and the fact that athletes are only going to progress even farther now that they're aware of things like fasting, getting in a cold plunge, of writing, meditating. All these things I still feel like aren't widely common knowledge to people. But it's going to become common knowledge if it hasn't already. I would imagine if you're in the NFL, you've got the people around you that have all the knowledge and then some. But the guys that are going to stand out are going to be the guys that do these things. Derrick Henry talks about how he fasts pretty much the whole day during the season. You know what I mean? And then you see what he does on the field. You see what he does on the field. This damn coach, Woody Hayes, he sounds like a legendary-ass coach. He won like 2 or 3 consensus national titles at Ohio State. Guy's competitive as all shit. And you could see it when he was talking about, I don't like losing. And I found this clip of him, I think that when they were playing the No, it was Clemson. Ohio State, Clemson. Here's a clip.
Throws it, try to intercept it. Charlie Palmer, the middle guard, intercepted it. Schuster looked into the middle of the short man, and it went right in Palmer's hand. The first turnover by Ohio State. And we got a big fight going on.
Bro, if he was willing to do that out in the open, imagine what he's willing to do to his players in practice behind closed doors, dude. The 70s were just a different time for football. It's kind of dark, but anybody I've met that played football in the 70s, kind of, you know, they're older now, these guys that played in the 70s. And they got most of them you meet that were high-level football players at that time, they ain't all the way there. You know, it's like they're, most of them are CTE bastards, dude. And it was like people just didn't know about head trauma back then. They had no idea. And these coaches, they were so much tougher and grittier, and they, you know, I would hear stories from folks that, you know, played back then, and they would, you know, not let them drink water during practice, because if they drank water, they would, you know, they wouldn't be as tough. You know, rub some dirt on it, play through injuries. I mean, there's pros and cons to that, because the long-term repercussions of playing football in the 70s were not good. But on the other hand, bro, the fact that these boys were probably breaking bones and going back in and hitting, the fact that these boys were probably getting their lights knocked clean out, don't remember their grandma's name, And they go back in the game, and they're crunching heads, you know. That part about it, I think, is cool. Because the response to adversity, the ceiling's probably a little bit higher in terms of, like, how resilient you can be as a human in circumstances where, like, if you screw up, like, literally your head coach is going to be punching you in the neck. You know what I'm saying? In that clip, though, he was just so pissed off about losing. That kid that got the pick, he didn't do it. I mean, I don't have context for the game. The game was from the 70s. But you'd think that he was just pissed off because that was a game-sealing interception, and he couldn't contain himself because he loves winning so much. Woody Hayes. Big Woody. You know what I mean? Anyway, I thought that was cool. I was just prepping for the show. Found some stuff. Hey, you know what I mean? All right, what do we got next? Oh, yeah. I just found this guy on my feed, and he just, I don't know what he's saying. I don't, it seems like Spanish. I don't know for a fact. It sounds a lot like it. I can't understand a word he's saying. I looked at his page. He keeps opening his videos with video games. Video juegos. Video games. He just picks up dead animals and gags, dude.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Another one. Oh my gosh. I bet that dead animal smells so bad, bro. Oh, my little brother used to gag like that. He smelled something shitty. My little brother, I don't know if he's still this way. My little brother, when we were younger, we walked by a dumpster and he would just... Oh my goodness. I don't know if it's the fasting or what, but I'm about to get hiccups because I'm laughing so hard. I don't know, dude. I don't know what's so funny about a good gag. I don't know what's so funny about it. I think, bro, just hearing my brother just let it rip off of, like, walking by it. A pile of dog shit. You know what I mean? Like, dude, that, I guarantee, I just got the hiccups. I don't know why this guy is picking up dead animal. I mean, it's all over his page. I can't remember his handle for the life of me. I'll find it. Oh my God, we got the hiccups. Come on now, dog. Let's hold your breath. Hold your breath. Hold on. Let's hold your breath.
Stop.
Oh, my world was collapsing around me. Okay, hopefully that got the hiccups. Bro, I was belly laughing at that shit. I was belly laughing. I don't know. Like, there's another Instagram account. And it's this fella from Harlan County, Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky, which I'm familiar with. My dad spent his childhood there. And I mean, these people, they just kind of talk to you like this. And this one guy, he's got an Instagram page that he just ranks nasty foods. And it'll like shuffle above his head. And he'll have 1 through 10. And he'll get something where it's like, octopus and peas and gelatin. That's fucking disgusting. And he'll fucking gag too, dude. This cat will gag just from seeing something nasty. Just from seeing something nasty. So it's like everybody's got the damn gag reflex. I'll tell you what, man. You throw a pile of, I mean, Jasper, he doesn't have many accidents. But let's say he throws up and you got to clean that shit off the floor, dude. I mean, I gag for sure. It's a deep one too. It's like for me on the gagging, it's only the really bad smells that get me. Sometimes texture. If I have to pick something up that's nasty, I might gag. But I'm sure if my Instagram page was just me picking up dead animals on the side of the road, I bet some of them got a little funk to them. I bet some of them would make me gag like that too, dude. Hundo P. It's straight up just what it is, dude. All right, what do we got next? The Lions beat the shit out of the Cowboys, dude. The Lions absolutely dog walked them. And I really like these recap videos this guy makes. I'll just show it to you. The Lions really showed who they are more, or if the Cowboys showed who they are more. I would argue that it was the Cowboys that showed who they are more. But nonetheless, Ben Johnson, the OC for the Detroit Lions, had an absolute play calling field day. I mean, they called a play where Penny Sewell was able to fake like he was blocking, run behind the hitch route, and get the lateral. The man takes it down to the 1, almost scores, comes back as a penalty because he was illegally downfield. I mean, they had a bunch of these like trick plays Detroit did that they were running. Derek Derek. David Montgomery had a hell of a day. Jared Goff had a hell of a day. You know, I don't know if what's more intriguing, the Vikings defense or the Lions offense. Lions lose Aiden Hutchinson for the season. Broken tibia, fibula. It's got to be a brutal fucking injury. I've seen one guy do that, and it was in Pee Wee, ironically. And the whole ambulance had to come, and I hurt. I was playing fullback. This kid that broke his tibia and fibula was playing running back behind me, and I was lead blocking for him, and I heard his leg snap on the hit behind me. And I don't think I'd wish that kind of pain on anyone from what I saw. And so Aiden Hutchinson goes down to what was otherwise a jubilant performance by the Detroit Lions is dampened by the fact that they lost their best player. Hutchinson's number one in the league right now at 7.5 sacks. He's number one in the league on pressures. I think it was like 38 or 45 pressures he's had over the course of six games. And then like number one in pass rush win rate at like 38%. Hutchinson going down is a huge deal for the Lions. Now, do I think they still have pieces on the defensive line? Yes, they've got a deep D-line room. They've got Josh Pascal out of Kentucky, who's a good run stopper. Some left to be desired in the pass rush. And then they got some other pieces on the defensive line, a bunch of guys with long names that I can't remember. They got DJ Reader, who the Bengals refused to pay. I'm still salty about the fact that he's not with the Bengals. Although the Bengals D-line put up a great performance against the Giants. It was an ugly game. Bengals offense couldn't get going at all until the end of the game. But B.J. Hill being back in there, Sheldon Rankins being back in there. I remember, man, when we played Louisville my freshman year, at Samford, Sheldon Rankins was a part of their D-line, and that man was back there every play. I can't imagine what Rankins' pass rush win rate was against us because we threw the ball a lot. But where was I going with that? The Lions are going to have a morale challenge, not having their leader in there with them. Their best player, arguably on the team. I'd argue Aiden Hutchinson's the best player on the entire Detroit Lions roster. So you got that psychological component of him not being there anymore. Even though he's kind of a vet, I think he's fourth year, something like that. It's like a veteran presence. You know what I'm saying? I heard something about the Raiders possibly unloading Max Crosby. And Max Crosby's from Michigan, played college football in Michigan. And he said that the only other team he'd want to play for other than the Raiders was the Lions. But it just doesn't seem like that's going to be likely. Obviously, you guys will be hearing this definitely by the time it goes up. But it happened while we're shooting it today. Devontae Adams is headed to the Jets, and Amari Cooper is headed to the Bills, two teams that just squared off on Monday Night Football. Jets have just been hanging in games, man. They have just been hanging in games and on the wrong side of it. I really think their offense played well on Monday night against Buffalo. Their defense allowed a lot on the ground to a rookie running back out of Kentucky named Ray Davis. He had a big game. But now you got Devontae Adams over there on the Jets. Again, kind of the other side of that, you got a veteran presence in the receiver room now. Not to say that Garrett Wilson is not a leader, not to say that Alan Lazard's got really great rapport with Rodgers, but you add a piece like Devontae Adams to the Jets receiver room, it's going to be really interesting to see where they go the rest of the year, because with this trade, the Jets are pushing all their chips forward onto the table. They're saying, hey, we're going all in. And they're not just saying they're going all in. They're actually going all in. It was a great trade on the Jets' part, bad trade on the Raiders' part. I'm fearing that as great of a coach as Antonio Pierce is, he might end up being the scapegoat to the Raiders' struggles. That team just looks lost. They don't have an identity at quarterback. So they kind of got trade you-know-what-ed by the Jets. You know what I'm saying? Amari Cooper to the Bills is a huge, huge addition, and I'll be interested to see how much better he bolsters that that Bills offense. But the game of the week here on the show, I don't know if I'm going to do a board session or not tonight for y'all on this week's episode. I'm not sure. I haven't decided yet. I feel like I'm remembering most of what I wrote on the board. So we are covering the Lions-Vikings game this week. That is the most intriguing matchup to me on the slate. You got the Vikings at 5-0 coming off a bye week. You got the Lions at 4-1 coming off a arguably the best perform all team, all three phases performance by a team this season in the NFL, and the Lions beating the Cowboys 47-9. The Lions just looked great on all phases. They had 420-something yards of total offense. Jared Goff went for like 300-something of that, threw three touchdowns, no picks, 70% completion percentage. David Montgomery's looking stout as ever coming off this new deal. They do a lot of window dressing with Jameson Williams. They do a lot of window dressing with Amon-Ra St. Brown. They move these guys around in motion a lot, so there's a threat of the jet sweep.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
With J-Mo, there's a threat of the jet sweep with Amon-Ra. There's, I didn't watch much more film than that. I just know they window dress a lot. And a lot of single back, a lot of play action. They got Laporta to open up the passing game. So the question will be, I think the main thing with game planning in regards to the Lions is making sure that their pass pro is tight. They got to make sure that their pass pro is tight, because watching film on the Vikings defense, they like to integrate a lot of, I call them jack linebackers. It's a linebacker type guy. It's a linebacker defensive end hybrid. And so a lot of times they'll walk up, they might have like four linebacker type players out there on any given play. You'll have the two guys up in the box, and then you might have a three linebacker look where you got two in the box, one jack on the edge. You might have a four linebacker look where you got two guys in the box and two nine technique linebacker type guys. We used to call them a jack back when I played. I always really enjoyed that position myself. But what they do is they change up the front. So sometimes I saw a look on the first series of the game, Vikings versus Jets in England, where the Vikings just had eight guys stacked across the line of scrimmage. You had a safety down there. They'll walk Harrison Smith up there, 22 a lot, one of the best safeties ever play. So you don't know what he's going to do. You don't know what the jack's going to do. And Aaron Rodgers threw three picks. Aaron Rodgers threw three picks against this Vikings defense. The first pick he threw, I believe it was the first, was a pick six to Van Ginkle, I think 43 for the Vikings. And the reason he threw the pick is because Van Ginkle is in that jack spot a lot. I was trying to figure out if specifically Van Ginkle, because he's the guy that fits this kind of jack nine technique. He looks like a linebacker, but he's playing nine technique a lot, right off the edge, right off of the nose of the tight end or the tackle. And Aaron Rodgers throws a pick simply because Van Ginkle's walked up on the line of scrimmage like he's going to blitz, and then he just backs out and picks it out of thin air, like off the, like literally two or three steps off of his get out, takes it back to the house. So, and then the Vikings had a safety that made a play. Aaron Rodgers was throwing kind of a skinny post, I think, something like that, and just kind of airmailed it. And there was a safety back behind. And then late, the third pick by Rodgers against the Vikings D came on the last offensive play of the game for the Jets. And he was throwing to Mike Williams and Stephon Gilmore, who a lot of people, I forget about Stephon Gilmore sometimes, one of the greatest corners to ever do it, comes up with a pick in single coverage against Mike Williams, who's a big-bodied receiver, big playmaker. And Stephon Gilmore with the game on the line just makes a play because the Jets work back in. Here's the thing with the Vikings-Jets game. The Vikings struggled mightily on offense, and part of that is because Aaron Jones is out. He may or may not be out. I'm thinking he's going to be out because the Vikings just today signed Cam Akers from Houston. Houston's got Damian Pierce back healthy, and they've got Mixon back healthy. So Akers was getting used a lot by Houston in the last couple weeks, but now he's kind of in a position in the running back room where he might end up being the third guy. So Houston deals him to Minnesota. Akers reunites with O'Connell, head coach of the Vikings, Kevin O'Connell, because they spent time together back in L.A. And then, from what I understand, Cam Akers also spent some time in Minnesota previously. So Cam Akers might be a big factor in his first game back as a Viking, playing one of the biggest games of their season so far against the Detroit Lions. The Vikings really struggled without Aaron Jones. They really, really struggled without him. Aaron Jones is like fourth in the NFL at 3.55 yards after contact, and they had a fella come in, Ty something, to replace Jones, and there was a noticeable difference in offense. They've got problems, the Vikings. They've got big problems at right guard. I think the right guard's name is Ingram. Of all guards in the NFL that have taken 150 game reps this season, he's second to last in the NFL in pressures allowed, their right guard. So they've got another right – the Vikings got another right guard that should be coming healthy soon. TJ Hockenson might be playing this week as well, and he's a guy that's been on IR for a while off of ACL tear last year. So – who knows what kind of role TJ Hockenson is going to have. Darnold looked kind of like his former self back there against the Jets. So, and basically the Vikings defense won them that game against the Jets to send them to 5-0. So I think this is a really intriguing matchup. Lions, Vikings, NFC North, the best division in football right now. NFC North matchup. It's going to be really, really, really hard to game plan for Brian Flores' defense, dude. It's going to be really hard. Offensive coordinators constantly talk about how they're at the facility all night, every night, the week they're playing Brian Flores' defense. Because, even me watching film of their defense, I can't figure out who's – which, like, basically, I kind of hinted at this when I talked about Van Ginkle. I was looking at where Van Ginkle was lining up every play, and sometimes he would line up strong to the formation. Sometimes he would line up weak to the formation. Sometimes he'd line up in the A gap. Sometimes he would line up somewhere else, off. They've got to have a deep-ass playbook over there in Minnesota. And Brian Flores, you heard the story that Tua told about him. He's not easy on his players. That works for some, doesn't work for others. It seems to be working with this defense. And that might be a mentality difference between kind of harder-nosed, hard-hitting defensive guys and then, you know, quarterbacks like Tua. I'm not saying Tua's mentally weak or anything like that. I'm just saying that a linebacker, a head-busting linebacker, might take to nasty criticism a little better than a highly touted quarterback would. You know what I mean? But I can't I know I ain't no NFL offensive coordinator. But me watching the film of the Vikings, I couldn't figure out who was strong, who was weak. Every guy seems to know where they're lined up every play. I mean, they're pros, they need to. But it was like they stack a front, dude, like that front I mentioned, the 8-man front they come up with. I mean, the line of scrimmage is covered with their guys, and they got 3 guys back in coverage. That's it. The Jets snap it. Aaron Rodgers knows the blitz is coming, and it did, and he gets it out quick, and the Vikings still make a tackle to force 4th down. And so this defense challenges you. They say, look, bro, look, we're coming, and there ain't shit you can do about it, because we're still going to stop it even if you get it out, because they got that much confidence in their DBs. On the other side, for Detroit, they got a safety by the name of Kirby Joseph, number 31, that is really playing above expectations, according to folks in the Lions front office. This guy's a former volleyball player. He can go up and get it. And played both ways at Illinois. Played receiver, so the guy's got ball skills. And he'll roll downfield and bust your head. Kirby Joseph. He's a good dude. I think he's going to be an X factor in this game. Trying to force some turnovers. Detroit forced 5 turnovers against Dallas. Dak Prescott just looked errant with the football, dude. I don't know what's going on in Dallas. And it was on Jerry Jones' birthday. 47-9 loss. 5th biggest point, negative point differential in Dallas Cowboys history at minus 38 points. So I think keys to the game for Minnesota and Detroit. It's kind of a long list. Is Aaron Jones going to play? I don't think he is, because they signed Cam Akers. Is TJ Hockenson going to be an immediate factor in their offense? It seems like he's going to play this week. It's been a long time since TJ Hockenson's played a live football game, but he's a hell of a player. So we got Aaron Jones, Aaron Jones or lack thereof, keys for this game. Aaron Jones or lack thereof, Cam Akers, if Aaron Jones is hurt, Hockenson. Okay, obviously Detroit Lions are down Hutchinson, so it's really interesting because they balled on Sunday, but then your best player gets hurt, and so it's like, you know, the Vikings are kind of coming off a shitty game on offense. Their defense play lights out. Detroit plays well all around but loses their best player. You factor in that it's a division game. I believe it's in Minnesota. Let's see. It is in Minnesota. It's early in the year. Conditions won't be a factor. The Vikings have got a kicker by the name of Will Reichert. He's 9 for 9 on the year. Hit a long of 58 yards. On the other side, you got the XFL darling Jake Bates kicking for Detroit. He's 9 for 9 with only a long of 48. I would believe that the reason Jake Bates is long is not that long is because Dan Campbell's aggressive as shit. And you know, if it's anywhere outside of that territory for Bates, he's gonna go for it. He's going to call it aggressive. He's lived by that sword. He's died by that sword. Dan Campbell has. So that's the kicking game. We went through the injuries. I couldn't find any other injuries because it's too early in the week for the teams to have released an injury report. Obviously, we're shooting on a Tuesday, and so we're not going to know who's practicing until later in the week. So keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on the injury report, because I think Aaron Jones is not going to play, and that seemed to be a big difference maker for the Vikings offense. I think TJ Hockenson is going to play, so that could or could not be a big factor for the Vikings offense, who sputtered without Aaron Jones' presence. They throw up a lot of deep balls to Addison and Jefferson. Jefferson's obviously a one-of-a-kind player, and if the Vikings can figure out pass pro, normally, here's the thing with the Vikings too. I forgot to mention with the Vikings receivers. Their receivers coach is a 17-year NFL vet, and he is always preaching to these receivers, apparently. I don't give a shit. Just get open. I don't give a shit. Just get open. Double covered, get open. Triple covered, get open. Quadruple covered, get open. That's like his. So the Vikings receivers actually have, on average, half a yard more in separation than the rest of the receivers in the league. So I think that's part of why Sam Darnold's been playing so well. The offensive line isn't great in pass pro, but Darnold's able to find someone open and get it out. So that hasn't been a problem. Without Aaron Jones in the run game, you kind of see how it might get dicey for the Vikings. Cam Akers might provide a really good boost for them, and that's what makes this game so interesting. There's so many different variables, but Darnold was like 17 for 31, maybe worse than that, 176 yards, no touchdown passes, one interception, something like that. So he struggled. And obviously the Lions defense forces 5 turnovers against Dallas. I'm looking at this game. I don't know who the hell to pick. I sure as shit ain't betting it. I can tell you that. Might be able to find some good deals, but take some due diligence. I think that if Hockenson is able to contribute, if the Vikings can rip off a couple of big plays and their defense plays the way they have against arguably one of the hottest offenses in the league other than the Bengals, the Vikings at home have got a really good chance of winning. And I'd imagine that in Vegas they're going to be favored. But this Detroit team could be special. They might be one of those groups that no matter how big the margin of victory was the week before, that they're still going to play ball and not get complacent. No apathy. Apathy. Smoke a joint. Look at our feet. Marijuana's bad. Don't look at your feet. We're not getting apathetic. You follow me? So it'll be interesting to see how both of these teams respond. I'm tempted to take the Vikings in this game against the Lions because, there it is again, because they're coming off what they think is a subpar game. The Lions are riding. they were riding high, then they lose Hutch. And so that's another psychological wrinkle in this game that you got to look out for. How are they going to respond to losing their best player? Do they play their ass off for him? Or are they kind of demoralized and saying, like, ah, we ain't got much without this guy? I think they do have a lot without that, without Hutch. It's a really tough one to pick. I would say, see how I'm sitting on this pick? We're making this pick in real time here. I didn't premeditate this pick. I went into this show. I didn't know who I was going to pick in this game. I think Lions defense steps up. I think the Lions offense finds just enough creases in this defense to make something happen. And the way they're going to find the creases against this Vikings defense is going to be in pass protection. And I saw some plays on film where David Montgomery stepped up. He's a big physical back, and he shows it in pass protection. He steps up, and he stops blitzing linebackers in their tracks. I think the biggest key to this game of all is Lions pass pro. And you know, based on what we've seen from this group, that they're going to be game planning that all week. That's going to be an emphasis for this offense. The back might have to stay in and pick up some blitzes. I haven't seen as many reps by Jahmyr Gibbs in pass pro. But based on the kind of player I think he is, I think he'd be able to hold his own and get the job done. He wouldn't be out there if that was not the case. So if the Lions are able to pick up these Vikings blitzes and decipher these fronts, I'm sure Brian Flores will come up with some new fronts for this week, which is crazy, dude. Think about installing that kind of defense every week. All right, no. When this side's strong, you're going to go weak. You're going to fit the B gap. When this side's weak, you're going to go strong, or you're going to go weak. Like, I'm watching this film, and my head was spinning at this defense. And that's got to be a testament to Flores effectively going through each week, installing these different kinds of looks, and then getting out there and running it by the time Wednesday, Thursday comes around. Around the time where you'll be seeing this show on air is probably when the Vikings will be out there implementing their new defensive installs. It's a tough one, man. This is a hell of a matchup. That's why I wanted to cover it. But I'm going to go with Lions get the dub on the road. I think they game plan for this defense really well this week. I think they are going to work on pass pro every day this week. I bet they'll have a bona fide period for pass pro and blitz pickup. They got to. You know what I'm saying? I got the Lions going on the road. This team is a legitimate contender. I'm not saying the Vikings aren't. I mean, we're talking, in terms of this Vikings defense, we're talking new age purple people eaters type deal on this defense, dude. That's what we're talking about with this Vikings defense. And it's all about, I go back to Madden. I go back to NCAA 25. The folks that are good at the video game are folks that are able to show a bunch of different fronts. I'm talking defensively. And it's the same in real life, brother. You can have great players all day, every day. But if they're not in the right positions to make a play based on their skill sets, the unit's not going to perform. And Brian Flores seems like he's got a knack for putting these guys in each and every single one of them based on their skill sets in the perfect position to make a play. I mean, you saw it with Van Ginkle. He's walked up, I believe, in like the B gap or off the edge. I can't remember the rep specifically. And Aaron Rodgers thinks he's going to blitz. Aaron Rodgers. We had a clip on this show where Aaron Rodgers was in camp against the Bucks, and he's looking at a rookie walking up. He's saying, you're not coming. You're not coming. Tells him, you're not blitzing. Sure enough, he wasn't blitzing. So to have a veteran like Aaron Rodgers baffled, that's got to strike fear into every other offensive coordinator in the league, every other quarterback in the league, trying to decipher what they're going to see when they come out there against that Vikings D. Because I guarantee you, bullets are going to fly. They're going to see looks that they ain't seen before. So it's on them to pick it up. It's on them to figure it out throughout the course of the week, what potential looks could be coming. And I don't even know how you conceptualize that, because I'm sitting here, I ain't no NFL coach. I'll say it for the second time. I ain't no NFL coach, but I'm sitting here watching the film of this Vikings D, and I'm like, how in the hell does 43 know where to go each play? Because one play is strong, another play is weak, one play is on the edge strong, one play he's in the B gap weak. They're moving these guys around. So I ain't watching enough Vikings football this season, but we got into the film a little bit before this episode. So that's the extent to which I know. I love watching great defenses. I'm a defensive guy myself, so I need to tune into the Vikings a little more. So I got the Lions, and that's who we're covering for the week. No board sesh, okay? I remembered everything. You know what I mean? That's how we do sometimes. Sometimes you just locked in, man. We were kind of in a crunch to get this show off. I won't say a crunch. I crunched myself to make sure we got something off before the games go this weekend, because we had last week's episode drop a little bit after the game we previewed. So, you know, hit a nice little light jog with Jasper around the neighborhood. Pre-deal. And so, you know, here's the deal. Go on a brisk jog, a yog. Sometimes you remember things a little better. Food for thought. We'll see y'all back here next week on In the Jar with your boy Dupree. All right. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all watching. If anybody watches this long, I really appreciate you. Please, for the love of God, it takes a half a nanosecond to click like, to leave a quick comment, to subscribe, most importantly. That's the easiest thing to do. And you should do it. We'll see you next week on In the Jar with your boy.